Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And in President Obama's speech last night, he referred to al-Qaeda as a group of extremists who have distorted and defiled Islam, one of the world's great religions, unquote. Arguments between and within religious faiths are used by atheists as a good reason to abolish belief in God altogether. But a new book by New York Times science reporter Nicholas Wade looks at religious faith and its role in the good and bad of human societies and makes the case that we are genetically programmed for belief. It's called The Faith Instinct, How Religion Evolved and Why It Endures. And Nicholas Wade joins me now. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for asking me.
We just celebrated the 150th anniversary of the publication of Darwin's On the Origin of Species. And you say their survival of the fittest includes the faithful.
Yes, it does. And I think the faith instinct is there because it helped early societies survive.
How?
Well, most people think of religion as something very personal, and indeed it has that aspect. But it has another aspect, which it is very social. So there's no church of oneself. So when you belong to a religion, you emotionally commit yourself to the welfare of the group and to whatever the religion says you should do.
But you can pick those two things apart from an evolutionary standpoint, don't you? Social bonding doesn't necessarily imply belief in a supernatural God.
No, it doesn't. But I think it is the result of belief in the supernatural world, and that what religion provides is group cohesion. And that was particularly important in our very early days when we lived in small hunter-gatherer groups, about 100 strong, full of very self-willed, selfish individuals. So how do you get them all on the same page, especially bearing in mind they have no headmen or chiefs? So religion acted as a kind of invisible government. The gods were in the supernatural realm, and yet they were not unreachable. You could reach the gods through prayer and sacrifice. And in return, the gods issued decrees that everyone had to obey for fear of divine punishment. And it was a very effective way. It's hard to see how else you could have obtained the same result of getting everyone agreed, not just cognitively, but at a deep emotional level, as to this is what we should do. This is how we should treat other members of our community, which becomes the sort of moral fabric of society. This is how we should defend ourselves against others, even sacrificing our own lives if necessary. There's no other way you could get a primitive group of people who have no sort of police force or laws or courts or judiciary, no other way you could get them to obey group laws and make the society worth protecting.
It's fairly controversial, isn't it, to say that natural selection works on a group basis? Wouldn't an individual's religious faith have to help him pass on his genes individually in order for evolution to be in play?
This is a controversial issue among evolutionary biologists, but the background is the evolutionary biologists have great difficulty in explaining at all how our many social behaviors arise, because everything we do in society's benefit is against our interest as individuals. And yet these social behaviors must have arisen somehow. Now, it seems to me if...
But that's not true, really, is it? I mean, things that we do on a social basis, when we cooperate with others in a group, sometimes it's just altruism, but it also could be seen as in self-interest because we need the cooperation of the group in order for us to survive.
That's true. But the argument is, though, that if you're an altruist and you spend time helping other people's children survive, you'd have less chance to make your own children survive. And therefore, altruists must inevitably disappear from a society eventually. But that could be counteracted if a group of altruists is better able to survive than a group of non-altruists. So if you allow that selection can take place on the group level, which many distinguished evolutionary biologists do think is possible, then religion and other social behaviors could have evolved by this method.
Are there other traits that you know of that seem to be selected for on a group basis?
Well, there are many features we have which seem to be in place because of the benefit to the group. Blushing, for example. So how does it help if you tell a whopping lie for you then to signal to everyone by a change in your complexion that you've told an untruth? It's in the group's interest, probably not in yours.
Listener on our webpage writes, I would suggest then that the impulse to faith is subject to conflicting selective pressures. It is our version of the saber-toothed cat's canines. Okay, fine, there was a selective advantage to being religious, but now that that little monster of religiosity, as this listener calls it, has grown so much that it threatens to doom us.
I would disagree with that analysis, because I think what religion really provides is group cohesion, and it's then up to a society as to whether it uses that group cohesion for good or bad ends. And mostly societies are very interested in their survival, so they use religion for good ends.
Well, that works if the groups are insular and don't come into contact with each other, right? But given, say, the conflicts between Jews and Christians and Muslims these days, how do we make sense of a theory that religion helps humans survive in the modern world from an evolutionary standpoint?
Well, it's subject to other political rules. So religion helps people stick together. It helps particularly when you have corrupt governments who don't deliver services to their people. Where do you turn? You turn to religion. I think this is a major phenomenon we see in the Islamic world. They've not been blessed by good government, so they turn to their religion as a way of protecting themselves. And so I would say simply that you see religion performing its ancient role. Now, I don't disagree there's a downside to that.
As the Catholic Church played in the anti-communist movement in the 1980s when they didn't have good governance and things like that. But you do also write that war is inherent in religion.
Well, because that is one of the functions that religion evolved to serve. And it was particularly important, I think, in training men to be warriors through initiation rites that made them able to endure pain and not show fear to their peers. And it's very interesting how modern states have sort of partly dissociated religion from armies. Not completely. You have chaplains in the army, you have sort of drills and marches and so forth. But nonetheless, religion is still at one stage removed.
Nicholas Wade, my guest on WNYC, author of The Faith Instinct, How Religion Evolved and Why It Endures. And, you know, we had the noted evolutionary scholar and atheist Richard Dawkins on the show just the other day to talk about the anniversary of The Origin of Species. And I asked him about your book specifically, and I want to play a little bit of his answer. He said, first of all, that he agreed that the religious impulse is so universal that a genetic explanation makes sense, but...
But one thing it's very important to grasp is that because something has an evolutionary explanation, it doesn't mean it's correct. Because there's an evolutionary reason why people believe in supernatural gods or spirits or imaginary friends, that doesn't mean that those imaginary friends exist. It merely means that human brains have a predisposition to believe in them, and we can think of good reasons why that should be so.
So there's the atheist's argument that evolution, natural selection, can lead us to a false conclusion. Do you approach the existence of God or not in your book?
Well, I agree with the first half of Richard's position, which is that because religion is universal, it must have a biological explanation. But we part company at that point because Richard's view, and it's one shared by Steve Pinker and others, is that religion is what they call non-adaptive. In other words, it wasn't selected for its own properties. It simply rode piggyback on some other quality being selected. And the example Richard gives in his book, The God Delusion, is the redness of the blood. So natural selection didn't select the blood because it was red. It selected, you know, hemoglobin, which just happens to be red. Now, I think that's a very unconvincing argument when applied to religion, because religion is so very costly. If you look at primitive societies, they spend sometimes months on a single rite, you know, full of all-night dancing. So if the redness of the blood were costly in any way, it would be selected against immediately. Yet religion, far from being selected against, has become universal. Therefore, it must have been favored by a natural selection.
Deb in Park Ridge, you're on WNYC with Nicholas Wade. Hi, Deb.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to, this whole show is reminding me of an astonishing science program I accidentally happened upon on television. A very cheerful scientist talking about neurophysiology was talking about epilepsy and the things they've been able to learn about the human brain and its development from epileptic experience. And epilepsy, which is, of course, superfluous electrical activity in one part of the brain or another, when it occurred in the temporal lobe, which was apparently a very rare location for this kind of electrical activity, invariably gave patients visions of God. This one gentleman who had seizures all the time was in constant conversation with God, as was every single person who had epilepsy in that part of the brain, leading the scientists to conclude somewhat jauntily and without much repercussion that this was an evolution, that the evolution of a belief in God or a vision of God came from a Darwinian process. And I just, this whole thing is making me think of that.
Interesting. Does that connect with what you wrote about, Nicholas?
Well, there has been a connection between epilepsy and religiosity, but but I think that this is leads one off on a blind alley, because it's used by people who suggest that if you're religious, you're also mad, and I think that is simply untrue. We haven't yet found a sort of religion center in the brain, maybe because it's sort of too small to show up, but I just don't think we can make much sense of that observation right now.
Deb, thank you for your call. You write about the links between music and dance and religion, something I think might not be obvious in many of today's churches, though in a few. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think there's a very close link between music and religion, and that they both appeal to a very sort of deep emotional level of the brain, and I think they co-evolved. If you look at primitive religions, they are sort of centered around all-night dancing and music. So music and dance and religion are sort of closely woven together. And in all present-day religions, you do see music, although there is an ambivalent attitude toward it. Even the Taliban, who banned all musical instruments, allow a cappella singing. So I think it's an integral part of religion.
Anastasia in Manhattan has a thought about the evolution of religion. Hi, Anastasia.
Hello. Well, I thought this, that religion was born the moment that the human mind evolved from the animal mind. Animals do not know that they're going to die. But the moment we realized that our death was imminent, the fear, of course, you know, having the intelligence to have not only emotions and logic, because of fear of death, we invented something, God, to make it easier for us to accept our death.
Anastasia, it's it's a great topic to raise. And if we're talking about evolution from something that's not aware of its own existence in the sense that humans are, to something that is, and the awareness of the inevitability of our own death, then we have to invent something, or, you know, if you're a believer, then you're not inventing it, then you're getting in touch with it. But for the first time, a creature would have to deal with it.
Right. And religion, this is the personal side of religion, which is very important, because if religion were not personally attractive, people wouldn't practice it, so natural selection wouldn't see the social aspects. So religion was used much more broadly in early people's sort of cognitive vision of the world than it is in ours. It provided you have explanations for the universe. Religion was physics, religion was chemistry, religion was biology. It provided explanations for everything people wanted to have solved. And the fear of death and what happens in the afterlife is, of course, a major component of that.
And there are other theories, and we just have a minute left, but theories that religious belief is a byproduct, kind of an accidental effect of consciousness. Similar in a way to what Anastasia was saying, why do you think it's religion itself that got selected for?
I think religion plays such an important role, particularly in early societies and certainly in modern societies, that it couldn't have been just an accident. And as I mentioned before, it's so costly that natural selection would have eliminated it from our lives if it didn't play this vital role. And in my book, I try and show how religion, once it had evolved, It then changed as human society evolved and kept pace with the changes in the structure of human society.
And we will have to leave it there. We've been speaking to Nicholas Wade of the New York Times about his new book, The Faith Instinct, How Religion Evolved and Why It Endures, published by Penguin. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this hour, Damon Hewitt, the executive director of Governor Patterson's Police on Police Shootings Task Force, and James McManus, you know him, the poker player and poker writer. He wrote Positively Fifth Street. He's got a great new book about poker and presidents, among other things, and we will hear about the Obama style of poker, among other things, from James McManus coming up. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.